Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, again in the Upward Sports Studio for the 299th time that we've done this podcast. It's crazy. What can training for a marathon do for you physically and spiritually? You don't want to miss today's story from Melissa Rotarius as she explains what it has done for her. And then, what can we learn about running from the attack on Pearl Harbor? And there are some spiritual lessons there as too. You don't want to miss that. And joining me this week, as usual, Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis is back in his seat to share the great insight on this week's stories.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
It's good to see you back.
Yeah.
You guys have a good Thanksgiving?
We did. You know, I'm a creature of habit. I love traditions. And so every year we get onto Mexico Beach, which is in the panhandle of Florida. And my highlights of the week are the turkey trot, which we do, which is...
And how'd that go?
Like 80 people. Went great.
Okay.
And then on Friday, we go see Santa come in on a shrimp boat into Apalachicola, Florida, which is...
What could be better?
An incredible way to see Santa come in. But I want to tell you, I put my training hat back on just a little bit. My coaching hat, I'm sorry.
Yeah?
So my little niece, Langston... It's Holly's brother's daughter. She's about to go into the military. She's 17 years old. And, of course, you know, they've got to run for the PT going in the military, and especially the Space Force. She's going to try to get into the Space Force. So the PT levels are a little higher and more rigid for that. And so we went out on Tuesday to do a three-mile run, and she struggled. And it was nothing in her legs. I mean, she's a 17-year-old girl,
yeah.
And she does run some. And she couldn't make it through it. We walked a little bit and made it back. And so I put my old coaching hat on, and, you know, we used to be pretty blunt. And I was pretty blunt with her, and she was so mad at me. I mean, so mad at me during the race, because I'm like, look, this is nothing compared to what you're – but we crossed the finish line. She didn't walk the whole race. And then she thanked me when we got done. So I thought, yes.
Yes.
You know that, because we remember that.
Oh, absolutely.
Kids would get so mad at us, but it's because we saw something that they couldn't see themselves.
Yeah.
And I think she had an aha moment. And I really talked about doing hard things and do something hard every day. And so it was neat to kind of throw that hat back on for if it was just for a week. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the upside of coaching.
Yeah.
It's actually the upside and the downside, because you feel bad.
Yeah.
When they get mad at you, you feel bad, but you know it's ultimately good.
Well,
but it doesn't always turn out that way.
This is probably a little harsh, but I did make the comment during the run. I said, I understand you're mad at me, and I really don't care because I know what's in you. And it was like that. I remember the Marley Cowart moment back years and years ago where I kind of said something like that, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. But we need to tell our young people the truth.
Yep.
And, you know, I see this in you. I know it's there, and I know it's not your legs.
Yep.
This is all between your ears.
Yeah, and every time you hear on this podcast us saying something that seems kind of pointed, that's why we do
it.
Yeah. It's exactly why we do it.
So congratulations, Langston. She crushed it. She finished that race, didn't walk, and hopefully she's got a new outlook as she enters this. Because it may be sometime early next year when she starts doing some of her PT things that she may be graduating early. So I don't know. It'd be cool to watch.
Very cool. Well, you know, we, of course, you know me. I wait until Thanksgiving to put up the Christmas tree and all. I don't do it a month or two or three or four before like you.
You're so late.
But anyway, one of the things that happened with me going up to see my father up in New Jersey and coming back was while he was laying there in the hospital bed, one of the things he and I did when we were young was we did model trains together. And I really enjoyed that time. It was really the only time he and I spent together when we were young, when I was young. And he wanted me, he's got all those trains and more that he's collected over the years. And he wanted me to take them home with me.
And so I've got all those trains, and they're just, I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I do know what I'm going to do with part of it, but it's just,
you know, are they like Lionel trains?
There's some Lionel and some HO. So there's two different types. And but the Lionel trains are old. They were bought back in the 40s or 50s.
They're worth.
Yeah, yeah. And so the what I'm going to do, this is the reason I bring it up, is because when I was young, we put trains around the tree. That was something that you were supposed to do when we were young. And so I'm going to put some Lionel trains around our tree.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm going to hope that our little grandson does it destroy these.
But that's part of the fun.
Heirlooms.
That's part of the fun, though.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
That would be neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Our post of the week comes from Brooke Carpenter. She said, how does one drink water and run at the same time without spilling water all over myself and without stopping? Because when I stop, it's difficult to get back into the groove and momentum to go again. This was a great question.
Yeah.
One that I know that we're actually addressing all over. And if you're on the app, you would have seen that I answered this question there. And I think it's worth discussing here. So there are those who advocate for carrying water with you. That's fine. If you want to carry water with you, okay, that's fine. I don't like carrying water with me. I won't carry water with me. The only way I would do that is if I was running like a trail marathon or something like that, which I'm not going to run because I have no interest in running.
Yeah.
But if I were, then and you would have to carry water with you if there's no water stops. But I want to say this back to the point about being pointed earlier. Mm-hmm. If you're running for an hour or less, you do not need water. Mm-hmm. You just don't. It's 110 degrees out. Okay, you need water.
Yeah.
That's different. But I'm talking about on a normal day, it's less than 90 degrees outside, and you're out and you're running for an hour or less, you don't need water.
Well, let me, because I saw that in your notes. Let's parse this just a little bit. If you do need water during the run, you needed it before the run.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You were already dehydrated before you started.
That's a good point. Yes. If you start dehydrated, then yes, then you would need it. That's true. That is true. But again, I'm not saying that you're wrong. If you want to drink water every 20 minutes,
sure.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you don't need it. If you're saying I need that water, you're probably wrong unless you started off dehydrated.
Yeah. Again, understanding the why is important. You know, I like to have water during my run, but it's not because I need it. It's a parchment thing.
That's right.
You know, my mouth gets dry and I just want it. It's not that I'm dehydrated.
Yep.
And again, we've talked about this before. Hydration happens in the hours before a run.
That's right.
And, you know, I feel like this goes without saying, but the fact that this question comes up proves my theory wrong that it shouldn't go without saying. But hydration is really as simple as just keeping a watch on your urine. I mean, I know that sounds weird, but keep your urine on the clear side and you're good to go. If it starts to get dark, drinking water during the run is not going to help you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you need to be taking care of that all day, every day.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you and I kind of differ some on water amount. The key is don't overthink it.
Right.
Drink enough to keep your urine clear. 80 ounces, 100 ounces, 70. Find what works for you. But more than likely, it's more than what you think.
Yes,
you need.
That is true.
Yeah.
And you still need a drink in the wintertime. A lot of people don't drink as much in the winter. And you don't need as much in the wintertime.
Right.
You still got to be hydrated.
Yeah.
So don't forget about that. But having said all that, there is a technique to drinking while you run.
Right.
And that's where I really wanted to get to, was that when you drink when you run, typically, almost every race I've ever seen, you get a cup that is a paper cup, some kind of paper cup. And the way that you do this is you pinch that cup so that there's just a small opening on it. And then you kind of, it's almost like sucking water out of it at that point. It's a lot easier to not spill it all over yourself. But what so many people do is they try to take that cup and drink it like they would normally.
Yeah.
And if you do that, yes, you're going to spill it all over yourself.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, that is something you can Google that. It's hard to find, actually,
really,
a video of that, because everybody says, well, just carry water with you. Well, I don't like carrying water with me because I feel like it slows me down if I carry water with me. Anyway, So interestingly, I found this video about how medical people now first said years ago, many, many years ago, first said you shouldn't drink while you run because it's not good for you. Okay.
Wow, really?
Yes. And then that changed to drink. Yeah. And then people died from hyponatremia from drinking too much because they were like overdoing it. There's a middle ground there. Here's the thing I want to say. Because if you're worried about stopping and walking a little bit through a water stop to make sure you get drinks, I want you to know this. I'm a pretty good marathoner. When I ran a 239 marathon, I walked through the water stops.
Sure.
Because I'm not good at drinking while I run, and I wanted to make sure that I got enough. I was I was in Myrtle Beach. It was a place where it's relatively warm. I wanted to make sure I got plenty in me. And so you can walk, and the good thing is, there's two good things about it. First of all, you're getting a little bit of a break. I didn't walk for more than 5 or 6 seconds. That's all it takes to get a cup of water down. But also, using those different muscles for a short period of time is actually good for you.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think it's bad. Now, I know the professionals don't do it, but they're also running two-hour marathons. Right. They're only out there for 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Right.
The most of us are out there for a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
And so walking through a water stop is not a bad thing. And if you have trouble, like she mentions here, getting back going again, then practice it. Yeah. Just practice it. You'll get better at it, and it'll be good for you.
Sure. Or just come to the conclusion that you don't care if you get wet.
That's another good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's kind of how I am. A lot of times it actually feels good.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that water puddle, you know, that you keep trying to avoid. If you just step in it, it's no big deal.
That's right.
You know, let it run down. It feels good sometimes.
That's good. Our run of the week comes from Michelle Sherritt. She ran a marathon in 5 hours and 45 minutes, and it says that she set a PR in it. I don't know if this was her first marathon or if she's run one before, but congratulations to Michelle for finishing that marathon. I mean, it looks like she did a great job there. And then also notice that John Sandifer, he's been on the podcast before,
sitting
in your seat.
Sure.
Ran one, too. He ran a 3:48 marathon. Wow.
Congratulations to both of them.
Yeah, yeah. So good to see them out there. I love to see these marathons being run because I know it's never easy. And listen, if you've not signed up for the Couch to Marathon and you want to run a marathon, we have that available.
Yeah.
Sign up for the Couch to Marathon.
So on this post, or as a follow-up or a transition from this post, I had an interesting question this past week. It was from Claire. And we were on – I don't think you were on this call. No, you weren't on this call. She asked me, she just ran a 10K. Now, she separates, I'm pretty sure she separates college running from adult running. So let's preface that. But she said, is it a PR, is it a 5K PR if you set your 5K PR while running a 10K?
That's a good question.
I said yes.
Yeah.
I said, what does your Garmin say? She said, well, it said I had a 5K PR. I said, then you have a 5K PR. But I know some people might differ on that. Where do you fall on
that? I say it depends.
Yeah.
And here's why I say that. Because everybody knows that a real 5K is not exactly 5K on your watch.
Right.
So calling that a PR just because at 3.1 miles you ran a certain time, I'm a little bit shaky on that. But it depends on what your PR is.
But not all 5K courses are exactly 5K
either. And that's true too. But I think anybody that gets for example, last year I ran the Silver Bell Sprint, and I think the course is the same this year. When I got through, it said it was 3.01 miles. Mm. That's not a 5K. If I had run a PR, I could not count that as a 5K. It's just not. Now, if your course is certified, it probably is a 5K.
Sure.
But I have yet to see the course that is certified that comes out to less than 3.1 miles.
Right.
So, but I say that, but here's where I have a caveat to it though, and where I say it's in the gray area, because let's say Claire ran 22:30 was her 5K split in this 10K, and her 5K PR where she ran a 5K is 24:08.
Yeah.
Then I say yes. That's your PR, because would it be a little bit more than that? Yeah, probably would be a little bit more than the 22:30. But I would count that because it's clearly better than her actual 5K.
I say count it.
Yeah.
If you're not Kipchoge or, you know, I tell people this a lot. Don't take yourself too seriously. Just take the PR, check that box, and go try to get another one.
Well, that's the real point is, what do you feel comfortable with?
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable,
if my Garmin says it, I'm taking it to the
bank. If you feel comfortable with that, then great.
Yeah.
Then that's your 5K PR.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. 100%.
Cool. Yep.
A matter of fact, you know what's interesting? I believe that my 10K PR was set during a 15K run.
Really?
Yeah. 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 Hmm. So, yeah, now that you bring that up, I think I
So
have,
if you go to your Garmin account, it's saying your 10K PR.
There was no Garmin back then.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you go to your Garmin account, that run would show a 10K PR.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It would.
And, you know, if your watch says it, then
yeah,
that's basically the gospel, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. All right. Question from last week. Which school has won the most NCAA cross-country titles? Simple answer. On the men's side, Arkansas won 10 titles from 1984 to 2000. I mean, they were dominant for those years. Michigan State is second with 9, but they haven't won one since the 50s. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. The most individual titles goes to Oregon, with Washington State a very close second. Back in the 80s or 70s, you had Salazar versus Rono. Mm-hmm. You had the African versus the American. Back then, and that was a fun battle. Rono won most of those, but it made Salazar better, I'm convinced. For the women, Villanova has won 9 titles. BYU is second with 6. Individually, Villanova, again, has 9 individual winners as well. And then second is way back with North Carolina State at 4. Combined, I think Villanova also has won 4 times on the men's side. So their combined total of 12 would be the most of any school total. Again, I ask this very, very broadly, so there's other ways you can look at this. If you want to go outside of Division I, which I did not specify, and so if you answered outside of that, then good on you, because mm-hmm. you're more accurate, actually, because Adams State from Division II, they have 21 titles on the women's side alone. And then mm-hmm. they have another 13 titles on the men's side. That is incredible. Of course, this program was built by the famous coach Joe Vigil, and then not long after he built this program to national prominence, it was taken over by a guy named Damon Martin, who has won most of these championships. And they're still dominant today. I think they won it last year. Not this year, but last year. And maybe the most dominant performance in NCAA history and championship in any sport, I mean in any sport, is in 1992 when Adams State had a perfect score in the national championship. That means their top 5 runners were 1 through 5 yeah. in the race. How incredible is that?
You know, we almost did that with the high school team.
That's true. In a region meet.
It was, what, we had 1 through 4 and then number 6. Was that right?
No, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. In other words, second place was not our guy. The guy who finished second.
1-3. Okay.
Yeah. 1-3.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was Felipe, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. He got his way into second there.
Yep.
Yeah.
But past that, yeah, it was.
On kind of throwing back to high school, I was talking to Alan Outlaw yesterday at Fast Break. I went up to get me some shoes. And he was talking about, have you heard about, you remember Adon?
Yeah.
From Dalton?
Mm-hmm.
He just ran a, gosh, I don't want to say this wrong, 104 half marathon?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Said he's probably going to do the Olympic trials coming up.
I missed that on Strava because I've seen him on Strava. He's
yeah, running I mean, well. And he's come a long way since, I mean, he was fast in high school, but man, that kind of took me by surprise because he was the guy from Dalton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He ran 15:30 in high school.
Yeah,
he was that's true. He was yeah. fast in high school, but yeah that's awesome.
Yeah, to hear. For sure.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
Okay, so we're back. And so Dean and I just got to talking off the podcast in our break about some training philosophies, and I said let's bring it back on the podcast. So let's pick this back up. So we were talking about the idea that if you run harder on your long runs
and easy runs,
I mean, if you run harder on your easy runs, does it make your workouts less important? And if you run easier on your easy runs, does it make your harder efforts that much more important? Was that the premise?
That's kind of what
that's
saying.
That's kind of the premise.
Yeah.
So where I was trying to connect the dots is, so let's just assume that for every part, and what I said before we came back on air was, I think this is where the data that we're collecting on everybody, billions of data points, and then throw in the mix, you know, health things going forward, we're going to start to see some trends. And what you're describing is something I've thought about before, is the idea, if what if for each individual, not industry-wide, but for every individual, Dean has a certain, let's just call it training load. I don't know the right word for it. And training load. And let's say that number is 100. And hard workouts may give you a 2-to-1 ratio over an easier workout.
Right.
But Dean's training load is 100, so whatever you do to get to 100 is your optimum training. So that could mean more hard workouts and much easier long runs, short long runs, or it could mean a little bit harder long runs and putting less in the bank on your hard workouts.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
But what if that number for every individual, let's take it to the top 10 runners in the world.
Okay.
Kipchoge down through whoever that number 10 is. What if Kipchoge's number is different than the number 10 guys, but the number 10 guy is training at whatever Kipchoge's number is? So therefore, it's actually hurting him. Whereas if the data started to tell us, hey, number 10 guy, you should be doing this number, maybe it's 80.
Yeah.
Does him backing it down make him go that much faster? Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
But it's something we can't calculate right now.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have, this is where I think AI is just going to throw some monkey wrenches in there. And it's going to, I think it's going to tell us things like, okay, Kipchoge does, you know, a speed work, a tempo run, and a long run in his latter, you know, build periods. But it may tell number 10 guy, you need to do 2 long runs, no tempo run, and 1 track workout. Getting that custom is something that really we've never done. Maybe for those top 10 guys, it's that custom, but
I don't know that they're, I don't know if they would experiment enough to know.
Right, because nobody has the confidence. Kipchoge doesn't have the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to go try 2 long runs for my next marathon build.
Correct.
He doesn't have that confidence,
yeah.
Nor should he.
Right.
Because that would be reckless.
Yeah.
But if there's data, so much data out there, which Garmin definitely has the data out there.
That's true.
From average Joe runners, because average Joe runners, the data that it's telling us, I would think could correlate to the elite runners, the principles.
Yeah.
And if, you know, let's, because like I was telling Alan yesterday, I was talking to him about my theory on AI. I said, what if we all understand right now that if your ferritin is 7, you're not running to your peak performance. You're just not.
Right.
There's no way. So we say, hey, get it above 40 or get it above 70 and you're good. But what if the magic number is 32?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. For elite guys, if you make a 2% difference or 1% difference, that's the difference between 10th and 1st.
Yeah.
You know, it's Boston true. Or, you know, 1 minute over the world record or 30 seconds under the world record.
It's true.
So you start to put the medical data in there. All these, I mean, like function health. I just went and got mine retested yesterday. So we'll start to be talking about that over the next few weeks. But all these data points, and I'm using iron just as one example. What if the data tells us that for Dean Thompson, you need to have this training load and your iron needs to be this? That has never been done before.
That's true.
It's never been done. I mean, because take iron out, put in vitamin
potassium, magnesium.
Potassium, all the things that we know can wreck our bodies, mm-hmm. but can too much of it also wreck our bodies?
Yeah.
Is there a sweet spot for each individual?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I don't know. I thought we just need to bring that live on the air.
That was way past what I had brought up, but that's.
But it's
good. It's true, and yeah, and I just wonder. I wonder if, because back to what your premise was, that it may be different for everybody. So how do you, from all the data that's out there, the only data that really matters to you is you.
Right.
Right. So then does it really matter that you have all this data?
I think it does. I mean, think back to when we were working with the high schoolers and the tri team.
Oh, that's what first thought with all of
this. We were constantly experimenting.
Yeah.
And they were our guinea pigs. But what we found out is, you know, there were some athletes like Lane that if you put him at, in the case I just used, 100 or lots of volume, he was going to break down. He did better at lower volume, higher intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And for other athletes, I'm thinking about like Dar Smith. I mean, Dar Smith was running 80 miles a week during his triathlon training, and that benefited him.
Yeah.
We knew that some based on numbers, but we just knew it intuitively.
Yeah.
Because when you work with athletes like that, you start to see, okay, this guy's lower volume, this guy's higher volume.
But the numbers would back that up.
They would back that up, but to a degree. So what if you were able to use that information, and because, you know, I always said I never used information to prescribe workouts. I used it to evaluate prior workouts.
Right.
Because I don't think any of us have the confidence to look at data historically and say, okay, you need to do this. Some coaches have done that in the past. I've just chose not to. But what if you knew that the data, if this person runs this many miles a week, they take this vitamin stack, and they did this kind of workouts, whether it be two long runs or whatever. I keep using long runs because that's kind of foreign to us.
Yeah.
You know, but what if it is something like that? I don't know. I'm talking in circles.
No, yeah, but
I think
it's intriguing. It's intriguing, yeah. And it could be a game changer.
I think the next game changer is going to be AI, and that sounds so weird when you're saying it in the context of making faster runners.
Yeah.
But, I mean, think about the top 10. The top 10, we used to say this about when the kids would go to the national finals. Those top 10 athletes, those top 10 runners in the world, they're all fast.
Yeah.
They all want it. They all have a training discipline that is second to none. They're all doing the same things, basically.
Basically, yeah.
So what is the only variable that can really change? It's something that we're not thinking about.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know. Yeah. Can using technology get number 10 to number 1? I think so.
Maybe.
Because, well, what did we always used to say for those top-level triathletes? When you get to the national finals, everybody's the same. Who's doing the little things?
Yeah.
Who's doing all the things, I used to say?
Yep.
It's all the little things, the minor tweaks here and there, and I think technology will show us. different tweaks to make. Yeah. And it may show us big tweaks to make.
Yeah. And I would just finish with this, that for you out there, if you're listening to this and you're just an average person, you go out there and you run 4 or 5 days a week and you don't put in a ton of miles and you're not focused, there's still some good stuff here for you. There's some
bigger
good
gains.
There are some things to consider here that could be impactful for you as well.
Yeah.
A matter of fact, the fruit's way lower hanging for you probably. So it's something worth considering.
And I will say, I'll give you kudos here because I forgot to do this. Alan was bragging on you yesterday because we were talking about this concept and he said, Dean is one of those guys that he'll try anything.
Yeah.
He's constantly trying and tweaking and there's really a parallel to our overall life is if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you're going to keep getting what you've always got. So if you want to be better, you got to start changing things. You got to start shifting, moving the dials. And he was really complimentary of you saying, Dean's always done that. He's always tweaked. And sometimes it bit him and he backed up, but it took him 2 steps forward.
Yeah, he's right. I knew what not to do.
Yeah. So sorry to side rail us there.
That's all right. This may be the longest podcast we've ever made. Sorry about that if you're into the shorter podcast, but here's a great story about why it is a good idea to run a marathon. And the hint is it's partially health related, but it's so much more. This comes from one of our, I won't say long term. She's
but
not
I would
been
say
around
household
for a long
names.
Time,
but, I mean, yeah,
but one of the household names, yes. Melissa Rotarius, she wrote this story called Where Running May Lead You. This is not a story about running, but a story about where running, Run for God, Upward Running, has led me and what training for marathons has prepared me for. I had never been a runner before, but felt compelled by God to start running on December 2022. It first started as just 5K training, but I was soon hooked, and I ran my first marathon in Mississippi on February 3rd, 2024, through the Run for God Couch to Marathon program. I met so many amazing people, and that graduation weekend will forever be etched into my heart. I continued to train that year for a second marathon and ran every woman's marathon in Savannah, Georgia in November of 2024. All this training and running, and I still did not completely understand why God wanted me to run. I knew there were many benefits like improved health, community, and the reward of completing a goal, but I knew there was more to it. Fast forward to February 2025, when I saw a post regarding a missions trip to Guatemala come through on my Facebook, shared by Angie Hawkins from Rebecca McGeorge, two longtime Upward Running members. In that exact moment, I was convicted to find out more, and by the end of that day, I was signed up to go to Guatemala in October 2025. Crazy, but I knew it was God. I felt the same conviction as I did when I started training for a marathon. When our first training meeting came around, I found out that three other Run for God or Upward Running members were signed up as well. This could not be a coincidence. At the risk of being vulnerable and sounding overly spiritual, I feel compelled to share a little about what God did in me during this trip and why I believe He had me start running in the first place. The words of Rebecca McGeorge, the director of Row 12 Ministries, kept running through my head. There is testimony of God through the work you did here. I am forever changed. So I write this as a testimony of God's goodness and how He provides in every detail, not of the things I've done, but the work He completed through me. To be quite honest, this was one of the hardest things I've ever done, if not the hardest. It was physically, spiritually, and emotionally exhausting, yet God used it. Indeed, He orchestrated it to break me in a way that was both beautiful and tremendously hard. I now understand why He had me training for marathons these past few years. He was preparing me for this trip. Anyone that has trained for a marathon knows how physically and even more mentally demanding it can be. There were countless things I experienced, but I'll focus on the mural painting. I was responsible for this particular project and knew that finishing it within the allotted time would require everything to go smoothly. But things did not go as planned. The frustrations and realities of completing a project in a developing country were overwhelming. Many trials came up and many mistakes were made. From that very first day, I wondered whether the project would even get started. Without going into every detail, we had issues with the block wall, with the paint, with the rain, you name it. It wasn't until day 5 of our 7-day trip that I was finally able to really begin painting. By then, I felt like mission impossible. And to make matters worse, my body was not adapting well to the environment. I was physically miserable. But God. Through all the trials, turmoil, physical struggles, and moments of complete chaos, I had joy, peace, and physical strength that made no sense. God had put this mural on my heart long before the trip, in a dream, and I knew He would see it through to completion. But for me, that meant trusting Him completely and leaning on Him in ways I had never had before. I used to think that He couldn't be bothered with the small stuff. I was wrong and prideful to think this way. Every time I was tempted to turn to my teammates for help, direction, approval, recognition, or support, like I normally would, He nudged me to turn to Him instead, to pause, to pray, to cry out to Him in my head or out loud, and He heard me every time. Within moments, He would send exactly what I needed, a quiet instruction for what to do next, guidance in handling a specific issue, a teammate who noticed my struggle and prayed over me, a vision of the next brush strokes, confirmation I was on the right path, peace where there had been turmoil, joy and relief when I was physically uncomfortable, a small child examining or commenting on the mural at the exact moment I felt discouraged, the perfect morning devotional or Bible verse, or even unexpected financial provision and support from my church family when God instructed me to stay an extra 2 weeks to finish the mural. I could go on and on, but I believe I have made the point. I sobbed then and am sobbing now because I realize I don't deserve any of this. I surrendered everything because He first surrendered everything for me. He cares about every detail of my life, even though I don't deserve it. Suddenly, all the Christian cliches I used to brush off, finally made sense. Everything I used to worry about seems so small now. I now know I can thrive on way less. Most importantly, I now know that I can trust Him enough to bring Him everything every day, and He will provide exactly what is needed. I want to cry every day and never forget what He did for me in Guatemala, what He did for me on that cross, and what He will continue to do if I keep turning to Him. I went to Guatemala as a broken, unsure Christian and came back standing firm in my faith as a child of God. All glory to Him. Rebecca McGeorge had one prayer for our team when we arrived, to be like Jesus and grow closer to Jesus. Mission accomplished. So when you feel God calling you to something that seems impossible, like a marathon or a missions trip, know that it's Him, and He will provide in the most incredible ways to see it through. It won't ever be easy, but the reward will be transformative.
What a great story.
Man, that's good, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know how me and my lack of social media exposure, I missed this. I knew it was going to happen, but then it just passed me by, and I never even saw this going on. But I did hear this, though. I heard that the more time you spend on social media, the dumber you get, which I totally believe. There, yeah. And so so I think I can't get any dumber, so I need to stay off of social media.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is exactly what we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
I was just studying that first letter to Corinthians. There's a part in there where Paul is talking about how he's not getting paid by the church, and yet he makes ends meet anyway. He's not saying he should get paid by the church, to be clear, but it's he's making ends meet no matter what. I guess I should say God's making ends meet. Mm-hmm. And Jesus lived that way too, right? He just relied on the next thing, that God was going to provide the next thing, and that's the way God wants us to live.
Yeah, and it's tempting to say, well, that was Bible times, it's different now. I mean, and sure, this was a long time ago, but one of my favorite books is the autobiography of George Mueller. It's kind of a more modern day example of give it all to God. I don't know, Dean, this story just showed me once again that running is such a little part of what we do here.
Yeah.
To I don't know who coined this phrase. Maybe it was Angie.
There's
a lot more than running going on here.
Yeah.
And this is so convicting. It's exactly what we all need to hear. You know, I saw in your notes, we need to have you talked about Paul having a loose plan. I need to learn from that.
Yeah.
Because I'm very structured, regimented, task-driven. And yeah. I mean, sometimes, a lot of times that's good.
Sure.
Sometimes that can be bad. And sometimes we just need to kind of let go. And not in a reckless way.
Yeah.
But leave margin for God to do something.
Yeah,
so many times we don't.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
You beat yourself up sometimes about that, but you do a pretty good job of adapting when things come at you that aren't the thing that
I do,
you
but sometimes
do.
They need to hit me in the head several times. And
yeah.
Maybe I need that nudge to let that happen.
Well, and to your point, there is more than running going on here, but it's important to recognize too that running is an integral part of this story too.
Exactly.
At the same time.
But it wasn't the focus.
It
wasn't the focus
of
the story.
It's yeah. Yes.
It absolutely. Was the means to an end.
That's right. Proverbs 16:3 says, "Commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established." She goes on to say, "If it is his plan, have no doubt that the work will be completed. If it is a hard plan, know that it is God, so that he may be glorified through the work, as we are not equipped to do it without him." That's why God uses broken people, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That way, you know, we don't take credit for the 299th episode here of this podcast.
No.
Because if God can use us, he can use anybody, right?
Yeah.
But just one caution, I would say that this is a great story. It's clear that Melissa is following God's plan for her. But kind of in between your point and everything that Melissa is saying here, sometimes we think we know what God wants, or we've got his best plan at heart. Let me give you an example. So in January, I'm going to run the USATF Club National Championships. I would love to be on the podium. One of the reasons why I would love to be on the podium there is because I would love to wear my Upward Running stuff, mm-hmm. standing on that podium and make a statement, right?
Sure.
And that's good.
Yeah.
Unambiguously, that's a good reason for me to want to do well. But is that what God has planned?
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to just go up there and run as hard as I can. And frankly, I'm a minute behind where I need to be right now. Chances of me being on the podium are very slim. But I don't know. It'll make it even more amazing if I am able to get there, I think. But my point is, sometimes we think we have an idea on where God wants us to go, and that may not be where he wants us to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be open to that, too. When we're headed in the wrong direction, we think we're headed in God's direction, and we're headed in our direction. We need to be willing to pack it up and go a different direction.
Or we can get so focused. This is where it kind of gets a little strange, but I think it fits. Is, you know, sometimes God he'll have us a direction to go. Going back to my old street light comparison, you know, we'll see that light lit up ahead and say that's where God wants me to go, and we march toward that. But too many times we put blinders on, and sometimes he lights something up over here to the right or to the left, and to your point, we need to have a loose plan. I mean, God lit that up out there, but that God can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll light this up over here along the way, saying, "Hey, take a detour over here." And where we mess up so many times is we say, "God, you told me to go there. I'm going there."
Yeah.
And we ignore the blessings along the way so many times.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to look at it. Matthew 21:22, "And whatever you ask in prayer, you will receive if you have faith." She says, "I believe that to have answered prayers, it requires us to have completely blind faith and a sincere, humbled heart."
So, usually I get hung on something every week, and I got hung here. And it's because I think there's so much debate about the idea of this verse.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but this analogy came to my mind this morning. It's because I was thinking about this person. But I have a friend. It's a friend you know who is a very wealthy guy. He's a very wealthy. He's not Elon Musk, but he can pretty much do what he wants. He's probably one of the most generous people that I know. How do I know that? And it's because we've spent years becoming friends. He's very wealthy. He's very generous. I know that about him. I know his character. He knows my character. Now, to kind of put this verse in perspective, whatever you ask in prayer, you will receive if you have faith. So let's try to pull that away from biblical context and put it in everyday context. So this person, I could go ask pretty much anything in faith, knowing that he would do it. So if I went to this person and I said, this organization is really close to my heart, would you donate $100,000 to this? He would probably do it.
Yeah.
If I went to that same person and I said, I want you to kill this other guy, that's not going to happen. Nor would I have the faith to think it's going to happen. I would never ask that second question.
Right.
And I have complete faith that he would answer the first. Why? Because he is able, number one, and our relationship is strong enough, number two. 10 years ago when I didn't know him, I would have not asked that first question.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he wasn't able, he was, but because our relationship was not there. Now we have a relationship. He knows my heart, and I know his heart. And I would only ask him things that I had the faith that he would do. You know, there's just things that I could ask him to do these things, but I wouldn't.
Right.
Because that's not in his character, and it's not in my character. And we all experience this. We all struggle with these, like, man, I don't know whether to say this to Dean or not. These are the same things.
There's a lot of gray area things.
There is, and we don't ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Our default is let's don't go there.
Yeah,
I think it's the same. I think it's our same posture with God, but for some reason, we strip away the relationship, the nature of God, we strip all that out and say, well, this means that if I ask God for $1 million, he's going to give it to me. That is not what this means.
No.
It means no more that than if I ask my good friend to kill somebody.
Right.
It's to me, the parallel is that black and white.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I totally agree with that. And there are a lot of people misrepresenting the gospel, who Jesus is, and what this verse means.
So let me interrupt one last time. Let's use this race you just mentioned.
Yeah.
The equivalent of asking my friend to donate $100,000 to an organization is the same as you asking God, make yourself glorified no matter what happens in this race.
Yeah.
The equivalent of you asking God, Lord, let me win this race, is the spiritual equivalent of me asking my friend to go kill somebody. It doesn't really make sense. Now, you can ask it, but it's maybe that breaks down a little bit right there, but you get the point.
Yeah, I totally do.
You know, we're asking so many times we're asking the wrong questions, is my point.
Yeah.
Now,
if God puts it on your heart that's what he wants you to do, then it's different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you're asking for your desires, my desire for that race should be, hey, Lord, whatever it takes, that gets you glorified,
right,
then that's what I want.
Leave the door open there.
Yeah.
Because you could go into that race saying, it's a foregone conclusion. My training shows that I'm not winning this thing.
Yeah.
That would close the door.
Right.
You need to leave that door open,
yeah,
which you're very good at doing, to allowing that to happen. Just like the Myrtle Beach Marathon.
Yeah.
You went into that race saying, there's no chance. I've got the flu. I got a shot on the way to this race.
Yeah.
But you left that door open.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if that may fall flat to everybody listening, but it made sense to me.
I like it. I like it. Just be careful not to, like you said, misinterpret that.
Sure.
Into thinking that God gives you whatever you ask. That bothers me. I've seen a lot of, I don't know if I'm lost in the algorithm or not, but I've seen a lot of this prosperity gospel type stuff lately.
Yeah.
And it's disturbing to see. It's also disturbing to see the people. The other thing that I see a lot of these days is the people that are Jesus's all love and no conviction.
Yeah.
People, you know, that no, God wants us to follow rules and laws, and he wants us to, you know, when the classic case, the woman caught in adultery. Yes, he did say, put your stones down, but he also said, go and sin no more.
Right.
It's and both. It's right. Not either or. And I think it's important to understand.
Sure.
James 1:12, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. This is why we should count it all joy when we fall into various trials, which is earlier in this chapter, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the reward for keeping our focus despite the circumstances, like Melissa did here. She went with a plan. That plan did not work. She followed where God led her, and then boom, all of a sudden, the blessings flowed like bathwater. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got this big, not that she didn't have a recognition of who God was before, but now God becomes even bigger,
sure,
to her, because not because of her plan,
mm-hmm,
but because of God's plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is kind of pertinent to our fitness journey too. Not that it's anywhere near as important or as glorious, but it was all the trials that Melissa went through, mm-hmm, to get to the finish line in that Mississippi Marathon that taught her that she could handle more than she thought she could handle.
Sure.
And that's why all of these, though, all those long runs, those torturous long runs we have, that's part of the reason they're worth it. I mean, they're worth it for a lot of reasons, but that's part of the reason why they're worth it, because they teach us that we can do these hard things, and that doing the hard things pays off in the long run.
Yeah.
Question, have you ever done something that was completely for God? I'd like to think so. I've never been on a mission trip, I will say that, but you know, I think there's a lot of other stuff I try to do, you know, for the church, for my community, mm-hmm, you know, just talking about how I didn't drive my truck over here because it's loaded down with food right now, mm-hmm, because of a food drive that the local school had that we're part of. And I like to think I do some things that are completely for God. I'd like to believe that that's why we do those things, right? But I don't know. I know you do a lot of things for people yourself.
Well, I think it's important that, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking about the bracelets that everybody used to wear, the WWJD, What Would Jesus Do bracelet. I think so many times we think that this has to be in some kind of big category. Like, I went on this trip to Africa, and the things you can do, the everyday mundane things, if you'll put it in the lens of what would Jesus do?
Mm-hmm.
I love those bracelets, and I don't like those bracelets because I feel like it became just like a catchphrase.
Yeah.
But the message was spot on. If you will stop, not even stop, just a little prayer. God, what would you do in this situation? I have not done that nearly enough through the years.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I do it, the more I understand that it can be, I'm going to drive to a podiatrist after this podcast. God, use me in some way as I go see this podiatrist. And you'll be amazed if you have that antenna up. There's always things that you can do that are completely for God. Because think about it, anything God directs you to do and you do it, that is completely for God. Because so many times it's not in our character. It's not in our will. It's not what we want. But don't think of this as some big thing that you have to do once a year. It can be the mundane things throughout your day.
Let me give you an example of something that hit me really hard. And I don't know why this just came to mind, but it was really important to me at the time. When my mother died, we had a memorial service for her at my church. And I didn't know who was going to show up, if anybody was going to show up. But we were going to have this memorial service so that my family could attend something. And so we did. And it didn't even cross my mind on what the team I was coaching was going to do. And while I was kind of busy running around doing stuff, because I was going to speak at it and I was going to do all these things, so I was getting ready for all of that. And then all of a sudden, the entire team all walks in together. All they did was drive to a place, watch a ceremony for 30 minutes, and go home. Nothing spectacular. Didn't take them a ton of time, but it meant everything to me at the time.
Sure.
And a lot of times just doing something small like that, just being there. They didn't have to say a word. All they had to do was sit in that pew and watch.
The presence.
That's it.
That's all it was.
And a lot of times that's all it is.
Yeah.
Yep. So it doesn't have to be anything.
And if we're on the other side of that, don't overthink it. Sometimes we think, oh, how can I fix this? There's nothing to fix there.
Yep.
Just be there.
That's
don't
right.
say a word. So many times is the right way.
And that's really hard for you and I.
Yeah.
You brought up your foot a little while ago. You got this issue with your foot. You bring it up. So before you could even finish the story on what was going on, I was trying to fix it, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah, but I beat you to the punch. I had already gone to Google, Dean, so
Another question. Did I have enough faith to trust him in everything I do, every decision, every action? Do you? I didn't before, and maybe that's why my lukewarm prayers were not being answered or my plan wasn't working. This is a constant battle for me. You just mentioned, you know, praying to God, saying, God, do something that glorifies you in this doctor's appointment. I'm so bad about now. Do I do it occasionally? Sure. I'm better at it than I used to be. I still got a long ways to go. I still like to be a lot better at it. I'm probably a little too arrogant for my own good. I think I know what's best on everything. And, you know, it gets in the way. But I think we probably all go back and forth on this one, too, to some degree. Because when we get to the point where we have to rely on him, you know, what I mentioned to you before we started this thing, that there was a Sunday that I walked out of the rehab facility thinking this might be the last time I ever see my father alive. And that was a hard walk out. And there were lots of tears on that walk out and on the drive back to the house. And the thinking that I'm going to get a phone call during the night, and they're going to tell me that he's gone. And then I thought, because at that point I'm like, God, please, you know, what I need something from you. I just need a message. What is it right now? And what he told me was, he said, listen, you thought that your dad was going to be gone 20 years ago. We didn't think he would ever make it to 60. These are bonus years. And on top of that, my father wears a hat around all the time that says, I love Jesus. He has it on in the bed in the hospital. He has that hat on because he wears that hat all the time. I know where he's going.
Yeah.
Why should I be upset if he's suffering and God wants to take him? I mean, there's so much peace in those moments when I realized that's what God was telling me. And, you know, a lot of times, what was back to the question, do I have faith to trust him in everything I do? That was hurtful walking out of that room. But God can soothe the deepest hurt if we'll just let him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well said, Dean.
Do you take the time to slow down, pause, and pray? Do you listen for his response?
Man, this is meddling here. I think lately I have more than ever. And honestly, we don't do this because of the word that is mentioned 365 times in the Bible, because of fear. Honestly, we don't do this because we're fearful of what he might say. So if you really step back and you think about that statement, I think you would agree with that statement, right?
Yeah.
We don't, because we're fearful of what he might say.
A lot of times.
So if we're fearful of what he might say, then we already know what he's telling us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But a funny thing happens when we slow down and we just ask him for guidance on what we already know he's prompting us to do. It's peace. Peace is always, I have come to learn that peace is always one of the best indicators of walking in God's will. Now, does it make it an easier path? No, on the contrary. Sometimes the path is harder, but you can have perfect peace. It's kind of like, I thought about this morning, it's kind of like hearing that drip in your house. Maybe it's the middle of the night and you hear a drip and you don't want to get out of bed, but you're like, there's a drip, and you just avoid it. You try to go back to sleep, and before long, by daybreak, you've built it up in your head that your house is flooded. You're just going to have to tear the whole thing down and rebuild it. We do this, right? We get it. We spiral. My wife calls it spiraling, because I do this. Man, I don't know how many times we've went on walks and she has to unspiral me.
Yeah.
But we spiral out of control. And when you finally deal with it, it's the faucet upstairs was just dripping because somebody didn't turn it off all the way.
Yeah.
So many times when we go to God, that's what we find. Yeah. It's just a drippy faucet.
Mm.
But God is saying, hey, come to me. I want to tell you something. And what he's going to tell us is it's just a drippy faucet. But we're like, oh, no. God, it's like we're being called to the principal's office. And we're like, avoid it and avoid it and avoid it. And I remember being called to the principal's office when I was in elementary school. That's back when they paddled. I went in, I got my three licks, and I went back to class. It was no big deal. But the walk to the principal's office? You were a kid like me. Uh-huh. You were the wild kid.
I know that walk.
You're like, I'm about to be beat to death. This is the worst day of my life. I hate my life. And you're thinking about just bolting and running away from school.
Yeah.
We do that so many times where I don't even remember what the question was. Do we take the time to slow down, pause, and pray? No, we don't. We create these narratives in our heads. We prescribe things that weren't actually said. Just go to God. Is it going to make the drippy faucet any different? No, but he's going to reveal to you it's just a drippy faucet. Or maybe it is something hard. But that's where the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will come into your life, and you're not freaked out about it anymore.
Yeah. Man, that's great. I can't add to that.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. And that's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. We all know the story of Pearl Harbor, right? Well, there's a little more to that story than many people realize. And you may already know these details, but bear with me. We can talk about how this incident relates to running and faith. It's called Running Through Pearl Harbor. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. A day which shall live in infamy, as President Roosevelt said in his speech to Congress at that time. That day is often cited as an example of how we should be ready for anything at any time, a warning to always be on guard and on the lookout for nefarious actors. The Japanese, as the story is often told, came out of nowhere to suddenly attack American air bases and our moored ships in the famous harbor of Oahu, Hawaii. But is that the actual story? The real story is perhaps even more tragic than the popular version. At 6:37 a.m., the destroyer USS Ward had reported attacking and sinking a suspicious midget submarine hours before it entered, as it entered Pearl Harbor. It turned out to be a missed opportunity to scramble our resources and be ready for an attack. In addition, and more importantly, Army radar operators on Oahu picked up an unusually large group of aircraft approaching from the north and tracked them for over half an hour as they closed in on the island. That began around 7:02 a.m. The infamous attack happened at 7:55 a.m. The reason we did not respond is that we were expecting a large group of American bombers to arrive that day. The attacking Japanese planes were mistaken for friendly aircraft. Now, you may be saying to yourself, but Coach Dean, this is supposed to be about running or walking. Why the history lesson? Well, I'm glad you brought that up. We can often look back and second-guess decisions that were made and the actions that came out of those choices, but when put in context, they are difficult decisions to make. The same applies to our fitness journey, just as it did many years ago at Pearl Harbor. You have a nagging pain in your hamstring. Should you shut it down for a week or two, or should you intensify your stretching and strength work? The truth is that we don't know which is true at the time, so all we can do is make our best guess and proceed. If you have been working out for any length of time, you have undoubtedly run into one of these complicated situations. So how do we make the choices that will lead to the best outcomes? Sadly, sometimes we're going to make the choice to ignore the incoming planes, and we're going to suffer damage, not because we intend to harm ourselves, but because we're making our best guess. But we have to make that guess as educated as we can and be okay with it. Maybe it even helps you make better decisions in the future. But let me give you a word of caution. Just because the American forces were devastated on December 7th, 1941, it did not mean they always took every ensuing threat as legitimate, nor did it mean that they packed it in and stopped fighting. Indeed, it intensified the American effort. Don't let one missed decision about your fitness journey cause you to be so overly cautious that it either causes you to freeze when making the next decision or makes you always fall on the same side of the decision process going forward. Not every niggle is a cautionary tale. There is something we should always be prepared for. Jesus said in Matthew 24:42-44, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day our Lord will come. So, you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." What I'm about to say will sound like blasphemy to some, I'm sure, but Jesus is very clear here. We need to be ready, period. We can wring our hands all we want about whether or not the things prophesied in the book of Revelation are coming true right before our eyes, but it doesn't matter. What matters is, are we ready? The American forces missed the warning signs of the attack on Pearl Harbor, and we may miss some warning signs along our fitness journey, but we better not miss Matthew 24:42-44. We don't have to wonder about the things going on in the world today or whether or not Jesus was serious. We need to be ready today because we really don't know what is going to happen tomorrow. Jesus said it, and I believe it.
Man, that's a great story, Dean. You know what stood out to me?
What's that?
There's a word I've never heard in my life that you used.
What's that?
Niggle.
Niggle. You never heard the word niggle?
I've never heard the word nigger. Not every niggle is a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Never heard that.
Oh.
Did you niggle. Make that up?
No, I've heard that a lot. Yeah.
Never heard that.
Niggle is just like, you know, some little small thing that irritates you.
I've heard tittle, but not niggle.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I learned something today. Right. Okay.
Well, this might be the hardest thing about our training, I think. You know, when I was coaching, dealing with injuries and what to do was the most frustrating thing.
Yeah.
And it was for two reasons. One, because you don't know exactly how the athlete feels.
Right.
Some athletes can explain how they feel really, really well. And you almost completely get it. And it's real almost easy to go forward with it. And in some, and it doesn't matter how intelligent they are. Yeah. You'd think the more intelligent ones can explain their pain better. Not necessarily true. I had one girl that was maybe the smartest girl I had on my team, of all the girls I ever had on my team. She couldn't explain an injury to save her life. Yep. Every time she had something wrong, I could never understand what to. Anyway, some of them aren't that good at it. So you don't know how they feel really. And then two, some people make a big deal over little things, mm-hmm. and then some won't say anything mm-hmm. at all. And they're different. You know, I mean, obviously the motivation is one. Maybe they want to get out of workouts and they want to treat everything as this big problem, and then the other one doesn't want to miss that workout because that may hurt them down the road, and maybe they need to miss that workout.
And both are bad.
That's
about it. I think as coaches, we learn to understand the character of,
we do.
Of the athletes. You've got some, I'm thinking of, you know, we had some athletes that would fake pass out, yeah. you know, at the finish line for whatever reason. And then there's the hard-headed ones. Like, I'm thinking of me right now. Right now during this podcast, I've got my foot sitting on a ice water bottle because I got something going on with the bottom of my foot. When just yesterday, my loving wife, who is the best part of my conscience, said, maybe you don't need to go ruck today. And I was like, no, I need to suck it up, buttercup.
Which, of course,
that's the wrong mentality. And so I didn't. That's where I'm learning through my years of wisdom that sometimes your wife is the voice of Jesus. I mean, yeah. really. And so yeah, I think either side of that coin is reckless. It's you got to listen to your body, but you've also got to suck it up sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes we're wrong.
Yeah.
As in, back years ago, you had a pain in your shin. I really thought it sounded like shin splints. You asked me my opinion. Yeah. That's what I told you. I thought it was shin splints. Well, if you have shin splints, it can be painful. Some people say take some time off. I don't. I don't know about hammer down,
yeah.
but I've seen too many people run through shin splints and be fine.
Yeah.
And so yours was, it had just shown up. It wasn't like you'd had it for a long time. It wasn't a chronic thing. And so we kind of said, let's just keep running through it.
Yeah.
And then we found out you got a broken bone.
You broke my leg, didn't you? Basically is what you're saying. But I think the thing about it is, this is where you have to be honest with yourself. Deep down, we all know which side of this coin we tend to fall on. You just got to be honest with yourself.
That is true.
Like the run I had last week with my niece, I'm convinced she knew in her head, I can make it through this. But sometimes we need an outside person to say what we already know. For some reason, when we hear it, it clicks. We lie to ourselves, and sometimes we need an outside.
So in this case, in your case, you needed your friend to hold you back some and say, you might check that out. That might be a stress fracture. And your friend said, hammer down.
Yeah.
That's real useful.
I mean, I specifically remember, because this is when you and I were running some together. I specifically remember the words I said. It was, man, Dean, I feel like somebody kicked me in the shin.
Yeah, that's true. A pretty good description of a stress fracture.
And we just kept hammering down for days. Because
you and I both fall on that side.
Right.
The point is that...
That's why we have Holly and Debbie.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I was the wrong person for you to ask. So I knew I'd
never ask Dean.
I knew I'd get around to blaming this on you rather than me. Well, as far as the spiritual part of this is concerned, you know, I've had a lot of these discussions with some of my dearest friends mm-hmm. about the rapture and everything that's in Revelation and whether what's going on, that my father is big on the signs and all the things that are happening. And I always say, I don't care because it doesn't matter. And the truth is, we've been saying this for 200 years, that the signs are right now. It could be any minute now. We don't know. The Bible is so crystal clear on this that we have no idea when Jesus is coming back. And so is it okay to speculate about all that stuff? Sure it is. There's nothing wrong with talking about it. I just don't want to dwell on it. You know, that's the way I look at it. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of weird in this way because the older I get, the more of a prepper I become. But the rapture never comes into my thinking. I worry more about, some crazy guy coming to my house with a machine gun than I do a rapture.
Yeah.
And that sounds so ridiculous. One is the end of the world, you know, as we know it.
But the point is you're ready.
I'm ready for that. But even in the prepping, I've told people this. I think there's degrees of preppers.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I'm that degree that, you know, I was listening to a podcast the other day where one of these guys were talking about their bunker. And I've said many times, I have no desire for a bunker. If it's that bad, take me on, Lord. I don't want to be here.
That's a good point.
If I have to need a bunker to survive whatever's coming my way right here in North Georgia, then I don't want to be here.
Yep.
Now, some people say, you're crazy. You're naive. You need to have a bunker and 20 million rounds of ammo. And no, I need to fend off the guy coming up my driveway with a machine gun. I don't need to survive the nuclear fallout from whatever happens. Just take me on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like it. The bottom line is, we should be ready for Jesus coming back. And as long as we are, all the other prepper stuff we might or might not do is fine.
Well, the cool thing about that is you need no prepper stuff.
That's right. That's right.
You just need to have it settled in your heart that you're a child of God, you're a sinner, you need a Savior, and Jesus is that person.
Amen.
That's all you need.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today.
Every week I share a reason why running and/or walking are so awesome. Well, it helps us learn more about our bodies and how they work. Of course, this goes for a lot of different physical activities, but as we work our bodies and we test our bodies, we work it harder, we learn more about its limits and its capabilities. And again, we can learn those things from like survival situations. You know, you could be stuck out in the woods and have to survive and you can learn your limits. Mm-hmm. That's not a real safe way to do things. Mm-hmm. You can go out and run and test your limits in a whole different way that is a lot easier, mm-hmm. and yet you can still test those limits. And so that's probably kind of one of the things I like about it. It's sort of like if you build a bridge, engineers build a bridge, there has to be some testing to make sure that bridge is good enough to support the things that are going to be whatever it is. If it's cars, then it's got to be strong enough to handle that. And we've seen what happens when that doesn't happen. When you the old Tacoma Narrows Bridge, if you've ever seen the video of it flopping in the wind because they didn't do enough testing to figure it out.
And then there's Elon, who does no testing. He basically, his MO is put that rocket up there. If it blows up, we'll learn what caused it.
Well, that is his testing, truthfully.
Yeah, that's true.
That's exactly, I mean, that's how he describes it.
It's expensive testing.
It's a very expensive testing, yes. Yes, but yeah. When we test our bodies, we're kind of doing the same thing. We're testing the limits to how far we can go and how hard we can go. We got a fun weekend coming up. The USA Cross Country Championships in Portland this week, along with the Nike Cross Nationals. So you have the high school athletes running their national championship, and you have the professionals doing their national championships at the same time on the same course. It is supposed to be rainy nearly every day in Portland. It is going to be a muddy mess.
Who runs first? Which race is first?
The professionals are last.
Oh, so yeah. The high schoolers will tear the course up nice and muddy for them.
Absolutely. Yeah, by the time the high schoolers get done, it's going to be nasty. Yeah. And you know what? In Portland, it doesn't usually get cold enough for everything to freeze and make the ground hard.
Yeah.
And so it's so probably not going to be
a slicky, cold mess.
It's going to be. Matter of fact, I was just watching the 2013 World Championships, Cross Country Championships, where the United States finished second, the last time they were on the podium. And It was in Poland, snow on the ground. It was, they had sections of the course that were muddy. They had puddles. They had wood chip hills that were like 3 feet high that were just like humps in the ground. They had steep hills near the finish line. That course had everything you could want in a cross country course.
I love it.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to see that in this year's World Championships that are here this year. The problem is the World Championships are in Tallahassee. And that course, I don't think that course has the ability to get sloppy. Yeah. I mean, there's a few sections on it that could because it's running across grass in a few sections. But for the most part, it's run on this surface that is, it's crushed seashells. Hmm. And so it's really, really stable. It locks itself in place really good. It's like if you ever run on really, really firm sand, it's a little bit like that, except it's probably a little bit firmer than that. Hmm. So it's pretty sure footing. So I don't think we're going to see that this year. So it was cool. And then we also have this weekend the BU 5,000 meter race, which I bring this up because this is a really interesting race. It's an indoor race where all the best college athletes are going to run the 5,000 meters. Mm-hmm. All the most of the top 10 on the women's side and the men's side of the cross country championships that just finished are going to run this 5,000 meter race. And there's something weird about this track. The times on this, they have actually,
we talked about this not long ago.
Yeah. There have actually been some organizations that have contemplated not counting the times that are run on this track because the track is so fast. Mm-hmm. Is that crazy?
But they can't explain it.
No. Yeah. I mean, the track's been measured and, you know, it's not too short or anything like that. But for whatever reason.
It's indoors. So there's not like a prevailing wind to their back or.
Nope. But it's crazy fast. So I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
Is it at, I wouldn't think it's at altitude. I mean, where is it at? BU?
It's in Boston. Yeah.
Oh,
no,
so
it's
not.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about thinner air.
No, nothing like that. It's
interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very, very cool. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's got to be the track surface. It has to be, I would think. I mean, I don't know what else it could be.
Yeah.
And something about that particular. Now, there are other tracks that are made out of that surface, but they don't seem to be as fast as that one is.
Hmm. So, interesting.
Yeah. We'll see if Gary Martin and Jane Hedengren can beat all the East Africans. Hmm. Those are the two Americans in there that have that could be near the front at least, better running. Rocky Hansen's not running. I wish he was running. Oh, I think Rocky Hansen's actually running the USA cross country championships instead. Hmm. So I'd love to see him make the world championship team. It'd be cool. Anyway, it's not that I have an issue with the East Africans. It's fine that they're out there, but you got to root for Team USA.
Sure.
Come
yeah.
on,
yeah.
Our trivia question for this week, fair warning, there's no perfect answer for this week's question, but present me with an answer, and if it's reasonable, I'll accept it. So
that's very subjective.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have a reason for it.
Right.
I'm good with it. So this may even come down to personal preference in some ways. So this is the question. What is the coldest temperature that it is safe to run in? And if you have an answer to that question, send it in to dean@upward.org. You have to be a member of Run Club to win. And if you are, you will win $20 off in the store. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Molly Seidel, the Olympic bronze medalist in the marathon in Tokyo in 2020. She said, "It's okay to be a mess sometimes. What matters is showing up anyway." Isn't that a great quote?
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, showing up sometimes is just half the battle. And when you keep showing up time after time, even when things sometimes go wrong, eventually good things happen.
Yeah.
It just does. I can't ever forget Drew Stamper when he had that year in cross country that he was so miserable. Mm-hmm. He was having a hard time. He's running JV and the next year, very next year, he finishes sixth in a varsity race, not in his, on his team, in the race.
Yeah.
And the kid just never gave up.
Yeah.
He just kept showing up.
You got to be there when the door opens.
Yep.
If you're not there, can't walk through it.
That's right. This week, I had a day where I didn't want to get out and run. It was cold and rainy. And you know, I've said before, I don't I don't mind running in the cold. I don't mind running in the rain, but I don't like the cold rain.
Yeah.
But I had to get out there.
Yeah.
And so showing up is get out the door anyway.
Yeah.
And then part of the way through the run, I'm just wanting to cut it short and go home. And it's kind of like showing up twice. Sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you got to show up. I had to show up twice that day and finish my run. And that's okay. Turns out, in the end, the run wasn't that bad. Mm. If I'd have just had a decent attitude to start with, it probably never would have been bad. But, you know, keep showing up.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story. All right. 299 episodes down.
Hey, before we sign off, I'm not going to be here for number 300.
That's right.
But you're going to have a good guest in my place. So I want to say before then, it's been awesome. 300 episodes.
Yeah.
Would you have ever thought?
I wouldn't have. I definitely wouldn't have at the beginning.
I can remember. I don't really remember the very first one, but I remember, was it 2B in your church?
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
We still don't know what we're doing, but we're better at not knowing what we're doing now.
That's true.
But this has been incredible.
Yeah.
It's all God.
All God. And listen, we appreciate you out there for listening, because if you weren't listening, we would stop doing this.
Yeah.
But there are people listening, and we appreciate it. And so thank you for making it successful. Now, you know, you can help us by helping the algorithm by going out there and rating and liking and doing all the things that you can do to boost that. So we'd love more people to hear it, because we're trying to share the gospel.
Exactly.
All right. Until next time, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, man.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.